Welcome to Stepping Out of Babylon, produced by Sue Supriano. Babylon is everywhere. It's the isms and schisms not only within the system, but within ourselves. Let's unify, stand aligned, and step out of Babylon. Everybody, my name's Sue Supriano, and my guest today is Don E. Wertschafter. Don is president of the Ohio Hempery Incorporated. So he lives in Ohio, and we are here at the moment in Santa Cruz, California, where we just met. I guess I'll just get a little background about you first, Don. I just was looking at these catalogs of your company and your hemp products, and they're very nice, and of course, a lot of people don't even understand what's so special and good about hemp. So maybe we could start there. I know you're a pioneer in bringing hemp products to the United States or just using hemp, right? Well, you tell me.
We started the Ohio Hempery in 1990, and it was my way of trying to convince people in my local community and in the country that you could have sustainable development without tearing up the environment. I was, as an attorney in my small town, always under criticism because fighting strip mining meant that I was taking away local jobs, even though those jobs were very temporary and they tore up the land for centuries to come. And so I wanted to create employment and create something that would change the criminal justice and environmental issues that I saw. So all these things led to my researching the cannabis seed and figuring out ways that you could use the stems and seeds to create industrial products that were very economical, environmental, and were legal in the United States.
Mm-hmm. And it seems that you've done that. Now you have a company called Ecolution, the ecological solution. It says here, I'm reading from the front of your catalog here, Eco Devout Creations of Pan-World Traders.
Yeah, we're operating Panworld Traders, Ecolution, out of Romania and Santa Cruz here, which is why I'm here for a meeting. I have an interest in this business, but other people do, too. My partner, Dylan Hillsman, in that. We're also working in Canada. We have Hemp Oil Canada, hempoilcan.com. And you can look at the incredible seeds and toasted seeds and hemp nut and hemp oil and hemp flour and other products that we make up in Canada from the hemp seed. For years, I was the only one making hemp oil. We were doing it in Athens, Ohio, from seeds we were importing from China. But the quality of the seeds was bad, and the government made it impossible for us to bring seeds into the country. And just at that time, Canada opened up, welcoming us to go up there and grow industrial hemp. And Canada enacted some very strict but fair regulations, which are intended to allow the farmers to grow hemp, but assure the public that there's not going to be any diversion of the crops into the criminal market. And it's been very successful. There have been some incredibly successful crops, and farmers are doing well with it. And the public is very well assured that there is no problem from this. And it's non-controversial up in Canada. They just want it to move faster. Well, at the same time, the United States, last October 9th, the Drug Enforcement Administration all of a sudden decided that hemp foods were illegal after being legal for tens of thousands of years and historical. Our ancestors from whatever continent we came from were using hemp seeds for food. And the DEA decided on October 9th, well, we got a new interpretation of the law and this is all illegal. And that put my business and many other businesses at great risk. Before October 9th, we were busy trying to sell hemp seeds to all these large corporations that were working hemp into their line of products. But after October 9th, none of them wanted to touch industrial hemp, and our potential sales went through the window, and we were struggling just to hold on to our businesses. And so as the industry, the Hemp Industries Association, which is our trade group of over 300 hemp industries, was able to afford an attorney, and we have taken it to court. And the good news is that the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals in San Francisco granted us a nationwide injunction against the Drug Enforcement Administration. And now the Drug Enforcement Administration is enjoined from enforcing that regulation until the court makes its final decision. We did our arguments on April 4th, and we're waiting for the decision of that court. And yeah, I'm on pins and needles. We've put a huge investment into whether or not, you know, into producing these hemp foods. And, you know, at first they weren't that good, but now our foods are kosher certified or certified organically grown and processed. And they're just incredibly high quality. And Canada has approved these, and under the NAFTA treaty, the United States is supposed to respect Canada's regulations and not create unfair trade barriers. And there's all these regulations and reasons why the DEA has no jurisdiction here. And hopefully the court will see that and give us the relief we want. But meanwhile, we're kind of dangling in the wind.
Mm-hmm. And we should even back up a little bit, or not back up a little bit, but remind people of the advantages of hemp and what's so good about hemp, because I find that most people, even people I would think would know, don't really know how incredible the hemp plant is. They get it mixed up with a psychoactive marijuana, I mean, which it, I guess it includes in a broad sense. But it seems to me that growing hemp and it obviously legalizing and growing it and using it, aren't there like something like 50,000 uses? And it could really change the world. We wouldn't have to be cutting down trees for paper. And I know you have a car that, didn't you have a, don't you have a car that runs on hemp oil? And to talk about the advantages of hemp.
Well, let's first say what hemp is. And hemp is one of the best growing crops around. Farmers loved it in the old days because it would break up hard soils and crowd out all the other weeds. They used it almost like an herbicide to get rid of noxious weeds from their fields. It's a weed. It grows incredibly well from Colombia up to Alaska. And people for centuries made their clothing and made great food products, animal food and bedding and all these other products from this plant. It became so useful in the 1930s when processes were developed for making plastics out of plants that all of a sudden it had to go. The different industrial interests who feared that hemp would do for industry what cotton had done in the 19th century for shaking things up and, you know, causing the Civil War as the whole network changed from the north to the south and from rural to industry. Hemp had the potential for decentralizing the economy. The planters in the 1930s wanted to make us all dependent on the central sources, you know, the big oil companies and such. And as long as the farmers had hemp, they had their own food, fuel, fiber, and medicine, and that wouldn't do with this future that they were designing for us. So as soon as farmers and these industries in Minnesota started to make telephone sets out of hemp plastic, that's when it was too much, and they created the whole Reefer Madness campaign of the 1930s, made everybody scared of this foreign invader called marijuana, and very few people understood that what they were trying to do when they got rid of marijuana was to get rid of industrial hemp, to get rid of the competition to the coal and oil and, you know, forest products and pharmaceuticals and all these other industries who were threatened by this rising young gold mine of industrial feed source. So we've been under hemp prohibition since the 1930s, and it's caused all kinds of problems for our society, and now it's causing all kinds of problems for our environment, and now it's causing all kinds of problems for our economy because all these foreign countries are encouraging the production of hemp. This is the new technology. Instead of relying on petrochemicals to create our consumer goods, drawing all these carbons out of the ground and spewing them into the air and causing the greenhouse effect, soon we're going to understand that we need to live on our annual income from the sun. We need to grow crops and use those crops for our consumer goods. When we burn those up, they produce less pollution, and the carbon that they do put out in the air is carbon that you mined from the air just 2 or 3 years before, not carbonaceous residues from 10,000 or 10 million year old dinosaurs that we're digging up to spew into the air.
In the form of oil.
Yeah, or coal or whatever. So, you know, hemp is leading the way for us reaching a sustainable future. And I think that the controversy around it is such that it really does have a chance of creating the momentum needed to overcome the forces of inertia that keep us from moving towards this level of sustainability. We do need to wean ourselves from these petrochemicals. We need to come up with substitutes, and this is one of the best ones on earth.
Mm-hmm. Really, it sure is. What did you just put it so well when you said farmers had fuel, food, what else?
Fiber and medicine from one plant.
Fuel, food, fiber, medicine from one plant. Well, that's pretty amazing. And not only are we using up our resources, but we have all this war and everything over oil. Oil is so central to the whole industrial society, and we could just change it that easily, actually. So, talk a little bit about the car. That's amazing that most people don't know about. As I say, most people don't know about any of it, but we've got food, myself, clothes, all kinds of things made from fiber. You got shoes made from hemp, and lots of good reasons to use those instead of killing animals. How about the car?
Well, in the 1930s, Henry Ford understood that there was a real problem with sustainability, that we weren't going to be able to rely on these sources of petroleum, especially in times of war. And so he did a lot of work trying to come up with alternatives to using these non-sustainable materials like steel and petroleum in the making and maintenance of a car. And so he built a car totally out of fiber panels, most of it being hemp. And it turns out that the panels were 10 times stronger and had 5 times of piercing resistance and all these other measures. Henry Ford demonstrated this to a national audience by trying to beat on a car with a sledgehammer, and the sledgehammer kept bouncing off that hemp car. Now, we're not doing that yet, although we are recreating these methods of doing that, and soon there will be hard body parts of cars being made. But did you know that in the Mercedes-Benz, there's 21 different parts made out of hemp right now? That in Europe, they're so concerned about sustainability that they've told the manufacturers that they have to make their cars either compostable or recyclable. And the fiberglass that was being used for these interior panels, the headliners behind the seats and over your head and all those sound deadening panels of the doorways and things, the entire automotive industry is moving towards sustainable materials like hemp for these parts. They're cheaper, they're lighter, they are safer, and they are far more sustainable, that you can compost these parts when you're done with the car. You could never do that with fiberglass.
I had no idea. I hadn't heard a word about that.
So what we did to demonstrate another one of hemp's purposes is we took 600 gallons of our oil and we powered a Mercedes car around the United States. We did 15,000 miles around up and down the U.S. and Canada, and around, we came down the whole West Coast and back across the South with this Mercedes we called the hemp car, generating publicity wherever we could about this. Now, I don't think the best use of hemp oil is for running cars. To me, I think the best use is in your bodies because it's an incredible nutritional aid for everybody. But still, we needed to show people that you could run a car just the same on this diesel made out of hemp as you could diesel made out of petroleum. So anything that coal can do, hemp can do better kind of thing. And anything you can make out of a carbohydrate, you can make out of a hydrocarbon. And so that's what we're trying to show with this tour. Now we're going to do a hemp boat this summer. We're going to take one of the fastest boats on Lake Erie, and it's diesel, and we're going to run it on hemp fuel. We're doing dynamo tests to show that its efficiency, and then we're going to go around Lake Michigan talking to marine owners and boat owners and everything about, hey, this could be the fuel of the future, and it's far less toxic to the water than anything that we can make out of diesel.
Really, that's amazing. In fact, maybe it'll help the plants and animals to grow because it's so nutritious. But maybe I'm pushing it too far because it's just so incredible. I mean, that you can make cement out of hemp, I understand. I mean, you could eat it, make cement out of it. And this is a plant that's a weed over much of the world, or has been historically. I mean, a weed is just what we call a weed if we don't want it.
I keep thinking about the Kentucky farmer who was using hemp oil in the crankcase of his tractor, and his rationale for that was, well, you know, these tractors are always dripping oil everywhere. Well, when you drip petrochemical oil on the ground, you're poisoning it. But when you drip this oil on the ground, you're fertilizing it.
Right. Well, of course, the U.S., the government, the Drug Enforcement Agency has to make this illegal. Can't have that.
Well, we have confidence the court's going to do the right thing here. But if not, you're going to hear from the hemp industry, because we're going to need the American public to come forward and rebel and write their congresspeople and do whatever we need to do to keep the Drug Enforcement Administration from tromping out these businesses and preventing Americans from getting these incredible hemp products that are on the market now. You can go to your natural food store now and find hemp ice cream substitutes and hemp oil and hemp seeds and hemp nut and hemp waffles and hemp pancakes and hemp soaps and hemp granola, and there's just a wide range of hemp coming in. And there'll be a lot more soon, because all over the world people see this as the new economy and they are gearing up for the hemp revolution.
Mm-hmm. Well, Donnie Wirtschafter, president of the Ohio Hempery Incorporated, is my guest. And I want to talk to you about a couple of other things before the show is over. And one of them is that I know that you just came from a conference that sounds very interesting. In Asilomar here in California, tell us about it.
Well, it was a beautiful place for a conference out there on the white sand beaches. This was the International Cannabinoid Research Society. This has got little to do with hemp, but a lot to do with cannabis. Years ago, scientists figured out where in the brain THC attaches, the receptor that it attaches to. And then over the last 10 years, they've found the natural chemicals that fit in that receptor, and they found that there's different receptors and different chemicals, and it's become a whole science that's beginning to unravel the mysteries of the human brain. And so there were several hundred research scientists down there at Asilomar learning about all these things that each of them are doing to try to, you know, analyze and understand how the brain works and why we have these receptors and how our body uses them. And these receptors have a lot to do with eating and sleeping and, you know, regulation of activities like that. For instance, if you block the receptor in a one-day-old mouse, that mouse will never suckle. It never learns to suck. Mm-hmm. So these cannabinoids have to do with that. And it's understandable then why when you smoke cannabis that you get a hunger reaction, and why it's so good of medicine for people who are wasting away from not getting proper nutrition. It was quite a conference, but the exciting part to me was the scientists coming now for the first time and reporting human studies. In England, they have opened up the door and allowed medical cannabis extracts to be given to a wide range of patients, and they're doing clinical studies on it now, trying to get a prescription-grade cannabis on the market. And England last week legalized recreational hemp, so these medicines are totally non-controversial there. They have industrial hemp.
Say that England legalized.
England last week decriminalized recreational marijuana. No longer are people subject to arrest for smoking pot in England. And so since they've made that step, the people pushing these medicines, it's just non-controversial. It's getting great government support, and there's really nobody fighting it. And my expectation is a year from now these drugs are going to be on the market, and patients like MS patients and spasticity patients in England are going to be getting great relief from it. It's going to be very popular, and then the patients here are going to rebel and just not know what to do to get that stuff over here. And then they're going to look and realize that the FDA and the DEA have stalled every effort of this British company to get over here and get these drugs even into lab animals. It's been very difficult. Nobody in this government wants to sign on the dotted line to allow this to even begin over here. So it's like night and day between, or day and night between England and the United States, where they have a very enlightened attitude in England and Europe, and we have a very backwards attitude still in this country.
And what's going to happen politically, do you think? You say you're hopeful that these cannabinoids are going to be legalized, and then what's going to happen? The pharmaceuticals, you're going to totally control things, or I'm just spitting off here. What do you think?
I mean, a lot of people come with that concern. I disagree. What's going on in England is an attempt to make cannabis fit the norms of medical science, to come up with a safe and effective and proven safe and effective and reliable and verifiable and consistent supply so that the doctors can prescribe it under the normal systems for patients so that, you know, medical marijuana and these extracts need to be separate questions. For instance, I can't imagine hospitals ever allowing smoked herb, at least not without going outside or something. They don't allow cigarette smoking. They're not going to allow smoked cannabis. But they would have no trouble with having patients use an inhaler or under-the-tongue spray or anything like that that is a non-standard delivery device. I don't know that HMOs and insurance companies are ever going to pay for cannabis, herbal cannabis for folks. But here's a form of it that they will pay for, and will get into the national health system in England and eventually into the HMO system in this country.
Mm-hmm. Well, we shall see. And I certainly hope it changes because, as we both know and we're talking about, it can really make a big difference in the world, actually, for a lot of reasons, not only the medical one, but that one too. So I want to ask you, Don E. Worchefter, about the Rainbow Gathering. I want to make a little shift in the discussion here. We just have a few minutes left, but I know you just got back from the Rainbow Gathering, which for people who don't know about the Rainbow Gathering is a big gathering that happens every year. It's actually an international movement, but there's one in the United States where people just come together and into a wilderness area usually and set up a whole alternative community for a couple weeks, and then they take it down like they were never there, except things get a little bit trampled. But it's pretty amazing. I went last year for the first time in Idaho, and there were 20,000 people or something, and this is definitely counterculture, but people live together very harmoniously and on the land. So it was just in Wisconsin, and you were telling me that you got arrested. So if you want to let people know real quick about what's going on there, because that is definitely has to do with the political climate of the country too.
Well, I love the Rainbow Gathering. I've been to most everyone since West Virginia's gathering in 1980 and everyone since Missouri's gathering in 1985. And
I left out one thing, which is that it's over the 4th of July and people come together to meditate on peace.
Yeah, it really is. It's kind of the continuation of the Woodstock Nation. And at times, the Rainbow Gathering draws 35,000 people. This year, it was in very rural Michigan in the northern upper peninsula, and it was so far out of the way that we had the smallest Rainbow Gathering we've had in many years, which was fortunate because these days we have an arm of the federal government whose sole purpose is to try to wipe out the Rainbow Gathering. You know, the First Amendment is supposed to protect the establishment of religion, and the Rainbow is certainly an establishing religion, and to see our government use the power of the gun and the power of their cavalry and the power of their new ATVs and, you know, inject 50, 60 officers into the middle of this religious ceremony is really rude. I mean, every car that came in there got photographed, and they photographed everybody's faces. And they were doing vehicle stops and roadblocks and everything. I just can't see them doing this to the driveway of somebody's church. The world would rebel, but here we have all these officers trying to prevent people from coming home to the Rainbow Church, and I find it quite offensive. This year, the government did everything it could to try to stop us. They brought in soil scientists and epidemiologists and archaeologists and everybody else. They could find no objection to the site that was chosen for the gathering. It wasn't a wilderness, and we don't use wilderness areas, but we use national forest areas that are recovering lands, and we leave them much cleaner than we find them. But this year they closed the site. They said, oh, there's an old town there, and we need to get you off. So they closed it, and they were really rude, and at times they arrested up to 15 people at a time and took them off site. I didn't get arrested, as you said. I got a ticket, which is not as onerous. I could pay $75 and get out of this ticket, but if I contest it, then I'm subject to 6 months in jail and a $5,000 fine, which, of course, I need to contest it because the government has no right to just declare a piece of the forest closed to pedestrian use. They can shut it down for reasons like they can keep us from making excavations or cutting trees or digging holes, building structures, but they can't say you can't walk into the property when the owner of the property is the United States of America. So that will become a big legal issue, and I'm going to spend the next couple of years of my life being threatened by this stupid ticket, and eventually I think we'll prevail, and the government will try again to figure out some way to prevent the rainbows from having their gathering.
Well, the best of luck with that, Don. Yeah, there's so many battles to preserve our rights. That's supposedly what the United States is all about, this whole thing they talk about freedom, but we find our freedoms going very, very quickly. I mean, it's always a struggle. Well, they say freedom is a constant struggle, and certainly since 9/11, it's kind of going from bad to worse.
We are really, really falling fast in this country. I don't know what to say, but I'm really sad about it.
Well, our time's up, so what you can do is give any kind of contact information you'd like to give, Don.
Well, I hope people look on the web for us. They can find great clothing at ecolution.com, ecolution. Anything about hemp oil, hemp food products, they can find it at hempoilcan.com. And any kind of retail purchasing can be done through earthrepublic.com or 1-800-BUY-HEMP.
And we can make a difference by how we spend our money. We really can. That is one way to do it, because we're spending it one way or another, so we may as well spend it in a good way that supports the earth more and is not destructive.
Well, thank you very much, Sue. I really enjoyed our conversation.
Well, thank you very much, Don E. Wirtschafter, president of the Ohio Hempery Incorporated. And my name's Sue Supriano. Thanks for listening.